Welcome back to the Charlotte Angel Connection, the Charlotte area podcast linking entrepreneurs, investors, and the broader Charlotte community. As you know, our goal here is to interview the individuals who are building, shaping, and influencing entrepreneurship in the Charlotte region so you can stay invested in Charlotte's growth. Today, we're fortunate to have Tom Rue come back and join us for part two of our interview. We actually took a little bit of a break, several weeks break in between first interview and second interview with Tom. But wanted to bring him back and talk a little bit more about Charlotte. And I thought we did a nice job. It's a longer than normal discussion again, so this one runs about 40 to 45 minutes as well. And I let it go because I was getting more out of time and just wanted to let it run. So we'll slip back to our normal 25 to 30 minute podcast next week. But pardon us as we continue to talk about Charlotte and entrepreneurship and other things in this podcast. So we covered Tom's impression of Charlotte and what it takes to continue to grow our ecosystem here. We talk about the early stage capital that is in Charlotte and that is coming to Charlotte through Charlotte Angel Fund and Venture South and Idea Fund and the newly launched Wolfpack Investor Network, the Duke Angel Network, and the Carolina Angel Network. We talked about, or Tom mentioned, the North Carolina Venture Capital Multiplier Fund that's run by Hatteras Venture Partners. And we go into, from there, we talk about getting more intellectual capital here in Charlotte. And we finalize the discussion talking a little bit about Amazon HQ2. And what it means for Charlotte and what it means for the cities that don't win, both here in North Carolina and across the country. So far-ranging interview with a lot more focus this time on Charlotte. Last time we focused a lot more on NCIDEA in general. This time I wanted to bring the discussion home and talk about Charlotte and where we are and where we fit and what's going on. So great interview. Certainly hope you'll enjoy listening to it as much as I enjoyed hosting it. So Tom, welcome back to the podcast. Certainly excited to continue our conversation from a few weeks ago.
Thanks for having me, William.
So Tom, last time our conversation went where we wanted it to, right? We spoke a lot about the programs that NCIDEA has right now, the four different programs that are running through NCIDEA. We spoke a fair amount about your history and how everything that you've done has led you into a perfect spot to lead NCIDEA now and into the future. And as we wrapped up the last podcast, we started just to tease a little bit of that conversation about Charlotte. I'll kind of summarize where we were. You mentioned how that when you took the NCIDEA job, you were excited to see maybe that Charlotte was going to be an equal to the triangle. And then once you got here into North Carolina and experienced it, you were almost disappointed to learn of what the startup activity was like here in Charlotte. The term I think you used was there was no center of gravity in the startup scene here. And you coming down here kind of helped bring a bunch of people into the room and kickstart a little bit of a conversation. Charlotte's known as a banking town, bankers fear risk. On the other hand, we have something like 40 new people moving to Charlotte every single day, which is like 20,000 people a year, 15 or 20,000 people a year. What does it take before all the new people override all the old stuff here in Charlotte? In other words, how do we get how does the startup activity synergize itself, if synergize a word?
Sure. I think you got to be careful that you don't make a false assumption here, and that is that all the new people could be the catalyst for change. I'm not sure that's a safe assumption to make, because they're probably being attracted by the fintech industry, right, which is the giant monolith of the economy in Charlotte. So I don't know, I guess to manage your expectations, I urge a little bit of caution to think that somehow might lead to a tipping point as opposed to, you know, catalyzing the energy of people like yourself that have been studying the local ecosystem. If I were to offer what's evolving, and there's my caveat, right?
Yes.
It's evolving. But I think there's a fair amount of really promising activity there, but I think it's under-resourced. So that would be my first big observation, that there's just not enough money, there's not enough talent, there's not enough manpower committed to some of these activities. And I think it's going to take some folks that are credible, that have been slogging away at it for a while. It's going to take finding the resources for them to support those activities and start building some of that gravity that I alluded to in our prior podcast.
Correct.
Because that's, I think, how it starts, right? I mean, occasionally, sure, there can be some external event that happens. You know, it can be that one startup that nobody had on their radar that, you know, goes boom, and then it starts its own little ecosystem that, you know, starts spinning off very positive things, whether that be senior people that after a couple of years realize, okay, hey, this was fun and we had a great amount of success. And yeah, John, the founder, he's not that much smarter than us. So like, we're going to go now start this, right? And you start that virtuous cycle. But that takes a little bit of time. I think in the time that we've talked the more time I get to reflect on this, I think it's behooven upon the entrepreneurial community, and we'll use that just big nebulous term, to articulate a value proposition for the region, you know, for Mecklenburg County, for the city of Charlotte. And I think, if I were to tick off frustrations, I think some of the frustrations would be the lack of kind of the corporate support.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall, forgive me if I did mention this in the last podcast, but I'll give you an example. One of my alma maters, an organization like NCIDEA called Jumpstart in Cleveland, you know, recently received a $24 million grant from KeyBank.
Correct.
Okay? KeyBank's the 18th largest bank in the country. I mean, you've got the biggest right there in Charlotte. And I'm not saying this criticism to shame anybody there to say that they're not doing their thing. If they don't know how to engage with the community, if nobody's making that clear, easy, and obvious, you can't blame them for not engaging, right?
Yeah.
So I think this activity that's starting to pick up some steam, you know, and that's why we supported, for example, VenturePrize.
Yeah.
And in particular, the conference that they were doing for a while, you know, to me, their conference was akin to what CED does here in the Triangle with the Tech Venture Conference and the Life Science Conference that's going to be coming up in February. You know, these things start becoming anchor points. These are things that start having energy. People plan on them. You know, there's an excuse for people to come together that attract people from outside the state in. It's activities like that, I think, that help the momentum going. But you got to articulate a vision and a vehicle for the corporate community to plug into.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, let's face it, these people are smart people. You know, bankers are smart people. They understand that as the ecosystem goes, so goes the health, you know, so goes the health of the economy, the health of their community from which they have to hire people. But it's not on them. We can't expect them to go out hunting and searching for the things to support.
Yeah. But to a certain extent, Tom, I mean, they support it with man hours, right? I mean, here in QC FinTech, you look at some of the advisors that are helping those companies that run through the program. I mean, they're lending some manpower, and they're lending some pretty high-powered manpower as well. What does it take for them to step out of a manpower and into a financial assistance role with it? And I know they do financial assistance, but they don't do it to the tune of $20 million.
Right. And I think that's great that they do allow employees to do that. And, you know, and I think that's great that people that work in that industry have that outlet, let's call it that creative outlet, so that they can satiate that appetite to do something in their community. But it really, you know, it's one of the three legs of the economic development stool of entrepreneurship, right? The three forms of capital. That's the human capital side. So, you know, you're getting help, you're getting mentoring, and then ultimately when the human capital part of the strategy starts really evolving, what happens is that some of those folks, you know, from the big banks that are donating their time get so inspired that they say, hey, you know what? I got to make this jump, right? And you start getting this higher management talent that starts, you know, leaving the comfort zone, the relevant comfort zone of, you know, of the bank to start something. I think that's a scary proposition for a lot of big companies. So they straddle this line like, okay, we'll let employees, you know, again, take care, you know, go ahead and placate this interest of theirs, but we don't want to full throat, you know, endorse it and support it at a higher level because, like, we don't want to be a farm team.
Yeah.
Right? It's so hard to find and recruit good talent. We don't necessarily want to encourage, you know, flight out of the corporate ranks. So there's this tension that always exists that, you know, and it's not, by the way, I know I'm picking on the financial industry, but it's germane to all industries.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But that's, again, that's one leg of the stool, right? The other two are, you know, that's the human capital. The other two are the financial capital and the intellectual capital. So the financial capital is another big piece of this. And there are many ways to skin that cat. And if you're asking how the corporate, you know, community can support that, it can be from everything from, you know, non-dilutive, you know, grant support through several of the programs that are existing there, whether they're attached to a university or some other EDO, economic development organization, to, you know, maybe they start like an alternative investment fund, right? Or they become LPs, you know, in the Charlotte Angel Network, for example, or other, you know, sources. There's another fund that's coming together.
Yeah, the FinTech Venture Capital Fund.
Exactly, right? There's LP opportunities for them to get involved in. So I kind of tend to think that that's always the easiest thing to do. Easy in the sense of you can articulate and you can deploy capital and see immediate use and return on it. And the third area, which is perhaps a little less obvious, but if corporate support, if they wanted to show corporate support is, and that's on the intellectual, that's the idea side of it is, it could be as simple as allowing yourself or volunteering to be first customer, right? So when you think about somebody that's starting anything new, you know, one of the biggest obvious milestones is first client.
Yeah.
Right? This is how I prove, you know, I validate my assumptions, you know, my value prop. It's in the lifetime of entrepreneurs, the life cycle, I should say, of entrepreneurs, it's the hardest, scariest thing for them to get over, the first timers, right? Mm-hmm. So imagine, you know, again, whether it's banks there or other companies there that could say, hey, we want to support the early stage ecosystem in Charlotte. Let us give safe harbor to a company that's testing a new product.
Yeah.
Like, hey, we will agree to be a guinea pig. Yes, we're going to put bumpers around it. So we're going to isolate you, you know, in case your product has to go through multiple iterations, we're not going to let you harm or do too much damage.
Yeah.
But you can come here safe under the assumption that we expect that this is going to be bumpy, okay? And we're going to help you evolve. I'm seeing some companies that are doing that now, and they're taking it a step further and saying, okay, since we're going to do this, we will add a little money into it, and then we'll take a carried stake, right? So that they can truly be a partner in this venture by saying, we will give you validation, market validation, as a dominant player in our market. We will help you evolve and challenge all these assumptions that were wrong when you started the first generation of the product, right?
Yeah.
We will be that success story for you. We will help you with some working or growth capital along the way. And we're going to be a partner in your success. And then by all means, they're going to have a carried interest in the outcome of that success, which they would be entitled to. They would deserve, right? I know it's cliche to say this, but that, I mean, like, that is the win-win scenario. It's a little chunky. Right? It's not real easy because people have to say, okay, what kind of product development tolerance could we have? Sometimes it could be pretty antithetical to culture.
Yep.
You know, so I'm not prescribing this as some sort of, you know, panacea, some kind of wonder drug for this, but it's another area outside of just writing a check that you could have huge impact. And I mean big. I would even argue, you know, for the big, big companies in your area, first client status could be of more value than writing them a physical check.
Yeah.
Because they build their whole sales proposition, value prop, the story gets built on that, right?
Absolutely. So you mentioned it, so I want to circle back around to it for a second. You mentioned capital. And 2 years ago, Charlotte's early stage capital scene really involved the Charlotte Angel Fund. Today, we've got the Charlotte Angel Fund, we've got Venture South, we've got Idea Fund. And more recently, as a result of some of the things that you've done within NC Idea, we've got the Wolfpack Investor Network, the Carolina Angel Network, and the Duke Angel Network. What spurred you helping get those three university-led networks off the ground, and what do you want to see those entities do across the state of North Carolina?
So what spurred it, the first part of that question is just this understanding that we can always benefit from more capital. So right. These were catalyzing efforts, and as much as you're offering even tangentially credit to us, I can't take credit per se. You know, this was coming together largely based upon the early success that the Duke Angel Network, Dan, was having. But there were enough of us in the ecosystem that said, hey, this is a great model, right? Let's not reinvent the wheel. So let's do this. So at the very easiest part of this to support it was under the notion of we're codifying a playbook that other universities can then just learn from and pick up with.
Okay.
And then the second part of that value prop is the syndication of it. So now what's happening is the three schools to date are sharing deal flow. Mm-hmm. So they have their independent on ramps. So Wynn and Can and Dan do the thing of their networks, and so they source through alumni connections, deal flow. But once you come in through one of those three doors, you then get visibility by the other two organizations, right? And this way, everybody gets to leverage expertise, and interests. Predominantly those two things of the collective network to fund more deals at higher levels. And that's exactly what's happening. So we just had their quarterly update, and I'm happy to report that they've already syndicated five deals.
Wow.
The three schools. And then this has had another cascading impact, and that is the North Carolina Venture Capital Multiplier Fund, the VCMF, that is managed by our good friends over at Hatteras. They now have set up a sidecar fund that will automatically add on to deals that the TVA, the Triangle Venture Alliance, does and syndicates.
Okay.
And the value prop there is like, hey, this is a deal that's been vetted by multiple networks, right? So it's probably gone through enough vetting and scrutiny, and there's going to be multiple entities working towards a successful outcome. So yes, let's leverage state resources, to increase that success. My biggest ambition and goal for the program is that we bring on more schools into the network. So, and I'm happy to report we are in the process of onboarding North Carolina Central University as the next school that's going to be joining the TVA and being able to leverage the model and the network and the learnings, because this has been. I mean, if you talk to John Belushik or Randy Meyer, or Joe over at Wynn, like, this is not just an easy drop-in. Like, the development office, right, of these universities get really nervous when you come in and you say, hey, we want access to the alumni network. Because they're used to asking for checks for brick and mortar. And these guys are coming in and saying, hey, we're asking for access just to offer them an opportunity to make more money.
Yeah.
And having them understand that you may find certain alum that actually appreciate that more than just getting hit up for cash because you have a capital campaign.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So there's been a lot of shared learning on that. which has been really good to see. And then now we see, as NCCU is coming online, we're seeing the other three mentoring them and helping them. And now, like, I would love to see by the end of next year, we've got 6, 7, 8 schools.
Yeah. So,
you know, in this.
Being here in Charlotte, you know, my natural next question is where is UNC Charlotte in that pecking order, right?
Yeah, you know, and that's, I actually have that same question.
I don't know anybody there, so I can't help you out right now.
Yeah. I just had some folks in my office 10 minutes before we jumped online here from UNCG, and I asked them the same question, okay. Right? It's like, because as I understand it, and I was very naive to this when I came down here, I didn't realize the autonomy that all the satellite schools have. It's like, if we're talking about the UNC system, for example.
Yeah.
So I really don't know if there have been conversations to have, you know, UNCC jump on board, or if other schools in the area, because, you know, it's not just the UNC system that can be part of this.
You throw Davidson, Queens, question. And all the other schools here locally into it, right?
I think they'd all be welcome.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
And I guess I would say, for the benefit, I'll take this opportunity shamelessly to say to any other of the schools, you know, if you're interested in that, you know, hit me up and I'll make the introductions, and I'm happy to come back out to Charlotte. And, you know, if there are people that need to understand the upside of this, I'm happy to share those stories.
Yeah. Well, with all the things that the Bajana brothers are doing and Launch LKN are doing up in Davidson, we'll see if we can't make a plug there sometime soon, right?
I'd be happy to.
So. Well, cool. So with all that being said, I mean, again, we have Charlotte Angel Fund, Venture South, Idea Fund, Win, Can, Dan. Dan Roselli's raising the FinTech Venture Capital Fund as we speak. And there's some other things that are brewing at the same time. The thing, when I first started interviewing people on this podcast a year ago, one of the things that people said we needed was capital, right? Well, here over the course of the last 12 to 18 months, I don't want to say capital is overflowing, but it's definitely building much faster than what people probably thought it was going to be 12 months ago. So what's next? And what's next for Charlotte to do? And how can you be, or how can the organization be instrumental in accelerating that?
Right. So I go back to my earlier statement on the three rungs, right? So let's hope and say that the financial capital is trending. I'm not quite as optimistic yet. When I get a note from Dan to say, yep, they closed, and you know, and a few of these other funds that have said as much, then I'll be a little more optimistic. But let's just, for the purpose of today's discussion, say it's trending in the right direction. That's great. So then we got to go back to the other two forms of capital and what's happening in the region to catalyze that activity. You know, so where are the ideas coming from? How are they being generated? Are they being nurtured? Who's advancing them? And then how are we developing the talent? I think if there's an area of refrain that I've heard, and this is not, and I repeat, not specific to Charlotte, this, I've heard this pretty much statewide, is that we don't have a lot of serial entrepreneurs. You know, so we don't have the multiple exited folks. It seems like it's a pretty small, rare club here in North Carolina.
Correct.
Which is, it is what it is. So that just means, okay, then we got to be really focusing on mentorship, you know, curricular programs, trainings, things like that, so that people that have the potential or have a good idea can find the confidence, the knowledge, and then the support that they need to take that idea and say, okay, I will leave my job and I am going to, you know, pursue this area. And what does that all mean? Right? What does that all mean? Like, where will they get the support? How will they recruit people that they need? You know, do they understand how to manage for growth and in a startup environment? Right? So that's where on my last visit, I was fascinated to see again. And I think this is the good news for Charlotte, is that there are a lot of really good people doing good stuff. I'm just not sure it's as obvious to the community and as easy as it needs to be for somebody to plug into it, right? Here in the Triangle, if you said, hey, I want to start something, there are many very easy points that you can plug in, not the least of which, you know, CED kind of runs this concierge type service. So, you know, here's our whole list of the network mapped. And, you know, what are you? Oh, you want to do some kind of ag something? Great. Go talk to these three people, right? Or these three organizations. You know, the accelerator programs we have through HQ, AU, American Underground, you know, Launch Chapel Hill, like these are all entry points, right? Because we all syndicate too. You know, we have a 1 million cups franchise that's operating every week and doing well. The meetup scene here, right? Here being kind of Wake, Orange, Durham County region. I mean, you could literally go to something every night.
Yeah.
Every night, right? And bump into people. And so whether, again, you're searching for a co-founder or, you know, your next director of sales or ops or marketing, you can do that. I think an effort in Charlotte to do that better, to make it easy, right? Make it easy for somebody that's trying to make that transition or even just imagining it. You know, we answer that even here where we have this density that I've already alluded to. We offer a modified version of our accelerator program, the Labs program. We call it Labs Light. We used to call it Labs After Hours because we did it in the evening.
Yep.
And it's directly, it's overtly targeted at people that have day jobs that, you know, haven't decided yet that they want to take that plunge. But they can come into this program with a kernel of an idea, you know, have it hammered on, have it pulled apart, and then they can decide for themselves. And we have pretty much equal distribution that happens. We have people that go through the Light program and go, okay, this is not for me.
Yeah.
Right? And that's a good outcome too.
Yeah, absolutely it is.
And then we have a percentage of people that say, okay, this has been demystified, right? So much of the uncertainty that's kind of kept me from taking that next step, you know, I figured that out. So, like, yeah, let's go do this, right? Stuff like that and having more of that, I think, would be very beneficial. And then I'm still bullish on Charlotte because of just all the other resources that are there, that if you find that tipping point, then I think stuff, it just starts feeding itself. I mean, this is a truism of vibrant entrepreneur-led ecosystems across the country. It just starts a flywheel effect. And I think that's where we're at in Charlotte right now. So we've just got to get a couple things going to get the flywheel to turn over.
Yeah. No, I would tend to agree with you. I have likened it to being on a train track, seeing the train coming, and gosh knows it just started, right? And we know trains move really, really slow when they first get going, but you know it's coming. It's just a matter of when's it actually going to get here.
Yep.
So I think recently you've appointed Greg Brown as a board member with over there. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay.
I'm very proud and happy to say.
Yes, I'm sure. So
he's an awesome dude.
Greg's fantastic. You know, we're not going to let you have him permanently, but as far as leaving Charlotte. But so you've appointed Greg as a board member. You've made really good strides, I think, as far as working with Charlotte area companies. Yet many in the Charlotte startup scene still don't think NCIDEA is here to support them. What's it going to take to change that perception?
Yeah, that's a great question. And when I first started, I'm going, I think, on month 20. So when you're new, right, you're very careful and you're worried. And so when I first started hearing this critique, I was, you know, it bugged me, right? And it was like, well, then, you know, we got to engage and we got to see and be seen and, you know, try to convince people that that's not the case. I've been here long enough now, I can give you a more obnoxious answer.
Please.
And say, you know, I don't know anymore that I care that that's the perception by some. Because I think it's a self-fulfilling, defeatist type of perception. And frankly, it's one of the reasons why I fell in love with Greg Brown when we were interviewing him for the board seat, because he said what I was intuiting, and that is that the community's got to stop this, you know, feeling sorry for themselves. Oh, we can't, you know, we can't see grants from NCIDEA. We just have to get better, right? Write better grants. and that's part of, I think, the challenge. You know, we're going to announce next week six new grantees. So we just concluded, it's not even public yet, the six. And I'm going to tell you, one of the six is from Asheville, One of the six is from Winston-Salem. We had the largest number of Charlotte applications on this round, and I give Devin Collins and Paul Lentenhall a lot of credit at Venture Prize, because we did this big 3-hour workshop on how to write a good app. But despite having the highest number of applicants we ever had, we didn't have a winner out of them.
Okay.
You know, the good news is that, you know, the group was increasing on the end. We had more that were getting higher in the rankings, just didn't make the final cut yet. And I think that's just going to continue to require work. I mean, it's not bad news, but it's like we're just going to have to keep banging away at it. And it might be that, you know, we're going to come out and do monthly workshops, right? It's a matter of the community. Let me say it this way. There is absolutely zero bias against any region in the state.
Yeah.
You know, if anything, Charlotte benefits, you know, there's one stage in the seed grant process that we actually gerrymander, or we will consider a gerrymandering, and that is going from the gross application pool to the semifinalist stage. In the semifinalist stage, and the reason we've rationalized this is we have seen semifinalists that barely make it to that stage and then blow us away at the finals and win a grant easy.
Yep.
And we've also seen some come in, oh, wow, if you were handicapping this group, you'd think these guys are going to be a shoo-in, and then they just collapse. Like, it doesn't happen, right? So that's the rationalization we've used to say, okay, let's gerrymander here for things like region, ethnicity, gender. And at that stage, actually, for not being from the triangle is an advantage, because if we have two companies, you know, there's one slot left, two companies that are perceived as equal, if one is from Charlotte and the other is from the triangle, we're probably going to give the benefit to the one from Charlotte, because we're being intentional and trying to diversify the pool.
Yeah.
Now, after the semifinal stage, it's pure meritocracy.
Yeah.
You know, just high score wins, so to speak. So they got to get better. I mean, that's the bottom line. They got to get better. And I think it's all anecdotal, but if there's some suggestions I can make, there was one point that at the last the workshop we did, Devin and I, is I think I get this perception that here in the triangle, the entrepreneurial community is more social than it is there. And the evidence I offer on that is we ask the question, okay, everybody anticipating submitting an application, have you talked to a past grant winner? Because all of our grantees are on our website. You know, you can see every one of them.
Yeah.
You can. There's nothing preventing you from reaching out to one of them and saying, hey, I'm so-and-so, I'm thinking about, you know, doing this. You have 5 minutes for me to give me some advice, right? There was like, I don't think anybody in the room raised their hand. And there was like 50 people in the room.
Yeah.
Like, no, it didn't even dawn on anybody. Here, you know, we get these phone calls, and it's like somebody that's applying has already spoken to like six past winners, right? And it's kind of funny because we see some language that seems to be tweaking now, right? It's trending in a certain way. So I think that's where, you know, we can help the community just get stronger, you know, and be more savvy. You know, we offer office hours here. Now, I know there's the distance thing here, but we will do an office hour meeting via the phone or via Skype. But 80% of the office hour appointments that come through here, especially with my colleague John Austin, they're from here. They're from the Triangle, right? If you're not taking advantage of the resources that are there, don't cry to me that, like, there's some bias, some hidden, invisible hand against you. There isn't. It's not the case at all. We got it. The answer is not that, you know, we have to have this forced intervention. The answer is, like, we need to make you stronger.
Yeah. No, I agree. So, and Charlotte has seemed to have always had a fighter's mentality to it. So, you know, hopefully it can continue to fight. I do think that to a certain extent, there seems to be kind of a cool club mentality of it here in Charlotte, which makes it a little bit harder to penetrate than maybe elsewhere. So, maybe a little bit harder to connect than maybe it is up in the Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill area.
You know what? I think there is something to that. And let me give you another piece of anecdotal evidence of that. So I was talking to some folks out of Asheville, and I was asking, you know, how much collaboration between Asheville and Charlotte is there? And they said, very little. And when I pressed why, this the word that was said multiple times is, well, it's just not a good cultural fit.
Yeah.
Now, that's really weird and fluffy and nebulous, but if you try to tease some meaning out of that, it's like, okay, I'm not, again, I'm not an anthropologist by education or training, but, like, what does that mean and why is it a cultural fit? And as I pressed on that, it's just like, well, there just doesn't seem to be a willingness to engage.
Yeah.
Now, and again, both parties can own blame for that situation. But they were, it was interesting because the question came up in the sense that they were saying where they were making kind of community, like sibling community affiliations. And in some cases, they were going down to South Carolina.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why are you going down to South Carolina? Why are you going to Charlotte?
Yeah.
And that's what actually facilitated this whole conversation. And it was just like, yeah, we just don't congeal as communities, man. We don't, you know, they are all fintech and, you know, corporate, and we're mountain folk. And, you know, we have just different priorities. And I just found that to be fascinating from just a curiosity standpoint. But unfortunately, I found it a little bit sad in the standpoint that, like, everybody can learn from each other.
Yeah.
Right? And, man, if you could start pulling that together more, both communities would benefit.
Yeah, and I think Dan Roselli has done a great job as far as trying to break down that clubbish type mentality, but I think it still has a little bit of ways to go before it's fully broken down.
Yeah, and Dan's just one person too. I mean, yeah, he's done great, but you know, there needs to be a dozen champions. You know, I look at what Walter Fry is doing.
Fantastic.
I mean, just again, that to me is some of the super important blocking and tackling on the front line, right? That's the part of showing up that has to happen before everything else, right? You can't even bitch about something until there is something.
Yep.
And so that there's this, you know, catalyzing effort that's happening there. I'm very encouraged. And then, you know, having the leadership of somebody like Walter that's doing it, it's not one of these things. You know, I always say, I've been quoted, unfortunately, as saying that in this space, if you want to do this kind of entrepreneurship-led economic development type work, you have to be careful for what I have referenced as really well-intended incompetence.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that tongue-in-cheek, but what I mean with that is you get a lot of people, again, through really good intentions, say, hey, I'll volunteer, or I'll do that effort, or I'll lead this, but they're just unqualified to do it. And because nobody else is stepping up and saying, well, wait a minute, you know, maybe Jane should do that instead of Jim. You know, Jim gets to go off and feel like he's doing his civic duty, but it's just having, you know, very limited results and outcomes because, bless his heart, he just doesn't know any better.
Yeah.
So if you really want to be effective on this, you have to find people and support people like Walter that are doing this important work, and they've demonstrated competency at doing it, right? And find more of them to do more of it.
Absolutely. So speaking of civic duty, a couple months ago, Amazon comes out and announces they're going to build headquarters too, right? And I think we had, I don't know, 4 or 5 bids from North Carolina come out to, you know, have Amazon move their HQ2 to their city. What's it going to take, or is it even possible for North Carolina to win? And kind of reverse it a little bit, is it a curse if a city does win it? Does it kind of mask over a bunch of other things and maybe even bring up a fair number of unintended consequences that are unforeseen at this point in time?
So you should have warned me I needed a double dose on my blood pressure meds today by asking that question. The staff here would be applauding you right now for winding me up. This has been a hot topic for me.
Yeah.
Because I've been now published on some of this, and I put some stuff out myself on this. This is the old smokestack chasing mentality. Okay. 238 proposals were sent.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And if you look at the Foxconn deal in Wisconsin as kind of a metric, that deal had less economic potential than HQ2, and the winning bid was $3 billion in incentives. We know that Governor Christie in New Jersey came out publicly and said that the New Jersey packages were offering $7 billion in advantages and giveaways. So my guess is there's going to be a minimum threshold of credible packages, and I'd be willing to bet we submitted some credible packages. But they, you know, anything that's going to be even considered is probably going to be at a baseline $5 billion, right, and up in incentives. And, you know, and I have now watched this, and this has been something I've watched for the last 10 years of my career, you know, seven of which being at Kauffman, a border state, where I saw companies routinely bilking incentives from the other state to move 8 miles across the border from Kansas to Missouri and back and forth.
Yep.
AMC theaters being one of the most notorious for doing that every so many years. And it's just, it's a race to the bottom. Okay, it absolutely is a race to the bottom. To say nothing of the fact that you get all of the negative impact immediately. So traffic, strain on infrastructure, you know, talent pool. I mean, think about all the big employers in your region in the state, right? That can't find enough developers, for example, right now, right? Now drop Amazon into your backyard, who's going to suck the oxygen out of the community in that regard, right? And ask what impact does that have?
Yep.
But that's just me kind of bloviating on that part of it. The more insidious thing, or let's just turn it now to an optimistic thing, is to say there were a lot of people that came together, okay, in North Carolina and in every state that had a proposal submitted. There were a lot of really good people, well-intended, that got creative, that came together and said, let's think creatively. In the case of the North Carolina offers, one of the reports I read said that we extended the job creation investment tax credit, because I guess the usual, or what was historical, the payback provision was 12 years, and they more than doubled it to 25 years for the Amazon proposal. So I sit here and I think, okay, so let's just speculate that the incentives package was $5 billion. You're taking a 25-year ROI viewpoint to rationalize, right, mm-hmm, these incentives. And then so now you have to beg the question to say, what else could you do? And I won't even say with $5 billion. I'd say like with a quarter of that, right? What could you do, or 20% of that? What could you do with $1 billion and you were willing to have a 25-year patience, you know, take a real long view on that? What could you do with that? And my, you know, obviously, my submission to you and anybody that cares to hear it is, you know, we could build 10 Amazons, you know, organically. And those companies would grow within the ecosystem at a pace that the ecosystem can sustain it,
yep,
right? So as there's growth and strain, you know, more roads are built, more infrastructure is added on, but it happens kind of in homeostasis, right, with the economic environment. And I think for me, it was a clarion call to say, okay, congratulations, a lot of people came together.
Yeah.
They thought creatively. There's only going to be one winner to this lottery ticket, because this is what it was. It was just a lottery ticket, right? I would submit, in side note, the one that wins is, careful what you wish for based upon how much you give away to get it.
Yeah.
But that's going to be only one community's problem. For everybody else, 237 losing proposals, take that energy, take those, you know, that goodwill that came together, and then look into economic gardening, not smokestack chasing.
Yeah.
And say, how might we deploy that? You know, I come from Northeast Ohio, from an organization called Jumpstart that benefited from something like that kind of thinking called the Ohio Third Frontier Initiative. It was a ballot initiative. It was passed twice and failed by just a hair the first time in 2003. Went back into the ballot in 2005, passed, was renewed in 2010. It survived the governor's mansion going from D to R. because everybody elevated above partisanship and just said, we need to invest in the early stage ecosystem throughout the state. They picked, you know, some key players. Jumpstart was one of them. They staffed them with competent people, you know, people that knew what the hell they were doing. They put programs that focused on execution and outcomes, not the puffery of what some things pass as economic development or, you know, nebulous outcomes. And then they funded it at scale, right? So we have this opportunity right now to say, okay, all this energy came together, this creative thought, this commitment of resources for this one thing, and I'm not hoping we don't get it, so I want to be clear on that. I'm not being a hater, but assuming we don't get it, right, what good can come from all of that energy, all of that thinking? And that's why I keep saying this, like, we need to flip the script on what true economic development activity is and should be. And this is our opportunity to do it. Otherwise, you know, it's just this sad notion. The metaphor that keeps coming to my brain is there's 238 communities at a virtual racetrack all holding a betting slip as the horses are coming around the final turn. And everybody's like rooting for their horse. And one horse wins and one group is celebrating and everybody else is going, oh, shit, throwing their ticket on the floor, right, and walking away.
Yeah.
And if that's what the majority of the losing communities end up doing, it's a huge missed opportunity.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. So certainly agree with you 100%. I'd love to see the energy from Charlotte refocused into some of the things that you and I have talked about over the course of today, and then also the things that we talked about last time. So, I mean, again, you take your $54 million fund and you add another two zeros behind it, it'd be a nice thing for you to play with, right?
Absolutely.
So, anyways.
So, the good work we could do with that.
That's right. So, well, thanks so much, Tom. I enjoyed part two just as good as part one. Great conversation. We'll take the challenge, I think, as far as a Charlotte community and be better for it. I think, you know, hopefully we'll see some winners on the next go-round for the grants. I have no doubt that we will. We've got some really good companies coming up, and I think you've seen it. Look forward to seeing you here in a couple weeks as you come down to Charlotte for the Venture for America Career Day. Thanks for your support of that. It's a great
event. It was our pleasure.
Yeah, no, really enjoyed it. I know y'all do great things, and you're going to continue to do good things. So thanks for your support across the great state of North Carolina.
It's our pleasure. It's a pleasure to do this. So thank you, and, you know, if we can help in any way, don't be shy.
Thanks so much,
Let
Tom.
Let us know.
Okay, thanks.
All right, you take care.
There you go. Hopefully you enjoyed our second part of our interview with Tom Rue of the NC Idea. Again, I like Tom. I like his perspective. I think it's beneficial and helpful for the city of Charlotte. I think he is beneficial and helpful for the North Carolina startup community in general. Certainly enjoyed his perspective on Amazon HQ2. I agree. It's both a blessing and a curse. Would love to see if the city of Charlotte, quote-unquote, loses if we take some of the effort that we put into trying to win and use it to grow the entrepreneur ecosystem so that we build it over time rather than getting a shot in the arm for it. So enjoyed his perspective, too, on the perception of Charlotte being slighted. I think it's kind of a breath of fresh air into the conversation. I think Charlotte sometimes needs to be slapped around a little bit to get that fire in its attitude that we're going to do it regardless of what anybody else thinks. So certainly look forward to having Tom come down to Charlotte on a frequent basis. I think he'll benefit the community. I think the community will benefit him some as well. So really good interview. I certainly hope you enjoyed it. But stay tuned next week on the Charlotte Angel Connection. We've got Alan Fitzpatrick, co-founder of Open Broadband. Many of y'all know Alan, as he's been involved in the startup community now for a number of years. So as his previous company got purchased, DC74 was purchased earlier this year, as they were purchased, he spun out and started Open Broadband. So we focus a lot on what Open Broadband is and how it's done, but we obviously, because of Alan's experience and tenure within the startup community, certainly touch base on the startup growth here in Charlotte over the course of the last couple of years as well. So really, really fun interview. Alan's perspective is always welcome and long tenured, if you will. So stick around next week for another edition of the Charlotte Angel Connection. William Bissett is an investment advisor representative with Seacrest Blakey & Associates, a registered investment advisor. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Seacrest Blakey & Associates. The topics discussed and opinions given are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Seacrest Blakey & Associates also does not offer legal or tax advice. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their financial needs with the appropriate professional regarding your individual circumstance. Investments herein described may be speculative and may involve a substantial risk of loss. Interest may be offered only to persons who qualify as accredited investors under the Securities Act and a qualified purchaser as defined in Section 2A, 51A under the Company Act or an eligible employee of the management company. There generally is no public market for the interest. Prospective investors should particularly note that many factors affect performance, including changes in market conditions and interest rates, and other economic, political, or financial developments. Past performance is not and should not be construed as indicative of future results.